Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm here on hosting duties. Devin Henry on the other side of the glass, producing, running the board, keeping us afloat. Swiss Army knife of Sports 360 AZ. Of course, we are on sports360az.com. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. That's where we're posting most of our content, including some pretty cool stuff that we're working on here in this week with signing day coming up. We also have a viral story that ties into Kobe Bryant and a certain Basha Bears shooting guard that will be up here shortly. Trenton McLaughlin, for those of you who didn't see, it went viral last night. So the Basha Bears out in Chandler playing the Perry Pumas, 48-48 with 4 seconds left. And Trenton McLaughlin hits a three-pointer to win the game. And what number is he wearing? Number 24. Turns out he is a diehard Kobe Bryant fan. So we are we got to talk to him. We are working on that content, getting it up on the site here as quickly as humanly possible. So be on the lookout for that. A really cool story, some really good perspective from a guy who clearly Kobe had an impact on. Obviously, a lot going on here in the Arizona sports landscape. We're going to waste no time getting to our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And last night with the Phoenix Suns. When's the last time you've seen the Phoenix Suns have an effort like that? Just complete domination against the Dallas Mavericks. And usually, I mean, if we're being frank, usually the Suns are on the receiving end of those beatdowns. But 133-104, the final. You look at some of the stat lines. DeAndre Ayton, 31 points, 9 rebounds. Devin Booker, 32, 9 assists, 6 rebounds. Mikal Bridges got in on the action, Kelly Oubre, and really it was just like they got out to a hot start in quarter number one, 32-19 after the first quarter, and really kind of let the Mavericks hang around a little bit and then exploded in the third quarter, outscoring the Mavs 48-22. Look, we've seen a lot of up and down play from the Phoenix Suns, and that's going to happen with a young team, obviously. They're continuing to learn how to navigate this NBA season because, frankly, most of them probably around this time of year, they were already out of contention. They were already kind of just like, all right, we're just going to try to not get hurt here the rest of the way. You bring in a guy like Ricky Rubio. You bring in Monty Williams. You bring in Aaron Baines. And now you have these pieces. DeAndre Ayton in year two, finally healthy off of his suspension. And you're starting to see him piece together some of these games. Now, he'll have a couple stinkers here and there. He's been super up and down, as has most of this team. And that's what a young team is going to do. But Devin Booker has kind of been the guiding light for this team, continuing to be crazy productive, really efficient as well. It's interesting. This year, he's kind of getting the volume scorer tag kind of knocked away a little bit. And I think that a lot of that has to do with having a really good point guard in Ricky Rubio and just having other options that he can go to rather than just, you know, chucking up the ball. And really, I think the volume shooter tag that he got to the degree that he got was always unfair. Yeah, there were certainly games where he would try to take over and honestly try to do that Kobe Bryant. All right, I'm going to, you know, just try to single-handedly do this. But that's because he had nobody around him. Now he has players around him. He has Ricky Rubio, DeAndre Ayton, Kelly Oubre Jr. Mikal Bridges has been, taking steps in year two. Aaron Baines has been an incredibly pleasant surprise. So our good buddy Espo pointed out on Twitter that it would be, you know, I think a couple weeks ago, maybe the Suns might not have made some moves to try to make it to the postseason. And most of the years, I would say, shooting for the 8th seed is not something you should – it should not be essentially a goal for you. You want to get in the top four. We know how upset proof the NBA postseason is. It doesn't happen a lot. So to go be a 1 and then go get shellacked by – one of the elite teams, whoever ends up getting that number one seed in the West, that's not – is that an accomplishment? I think for the Phoenix Suns it is. And a team, especially this young core who has experienced a lot of losing, to get them in a playoff environment, I think that would be important. So do you go out and try to make a couple trades to get some bench assets, create some depth? I think that's a no-brainer in my mind. So that's what's going on with the Phoenix Suns. On a recruiting front, obviously we are 1 week away from late signing day. BYU continues to pick up commits from the state of Arizona. A couple of these guys are going to be going on two-year missions, but Micah Harper already has signed, and I think a very underrated defensive back. This was a guy, he pretty much had a done deal with another school, went on a visit, and they completely turned his mindset around, and it's BYU now. I think the same thing, I think Jake Griffin, the offensive lineman who committed from Red Mountain to BYU this past weekend, I think he was pretty high on them, but he committed immediately after the visit. They're doing something on these visits where they're able to close the deal. You also have Lingi Havea, the Chandler lineman, who is committed there, and then Dean Jones, ALA defensive back. And then two of the best players available still in the state, Alex Lines, the Higley tight end, Tate Romney, the Chandler linebacker, who I think has been way under-recruited, and a guy that can rack up the tackles, plays really good pass coverage as well. He's going on a two-year mission, and I think that slowed some of the offers coming in for him. But his brother Gunner is over there right now as a wide receiver, one of the best Chandler, really one of the best wide receivers I've seen come out of this state. He could flat out take over games, and Tate has that sort of ability on the defensive end as well. Him and Malik Reed really led that defense the past 2 years. So if they get those two guys, like, that is an absolute haul that BYU is doing to come in and get those players out of the state. Alex Lyons, a very good tight end, had to sit out all of his junior year because of transfer rules. He was essentially transferring in district. Long story with that, but it did not hinder his recruitment. He's going on a visit this weekend. I would imagine they are going to try to work that same magic, whatever they were able to do with Micah Harper and whatever they were able to do with Jake Griffin. They're going to try to do the same thing with Alex Lyons. So that's kind of a big storyline to look out for. Marcus Libman told me he will be announcing his commitment on signing day right now. I know Columbia is in good standing with him. He's received a couple preferred walk-on deals from Power 5 programs. This is a really productive wide receiver over at Pinnacle. And he doesn't have the mega, mega elite speed, but he is plenty fast, and he flat out makes plays. USC has come into the fold recently, which is interesting, because if you remember, they came into the fold, was the first Power 5 offer for a certain player, and they quickly committed. Right now, I think there could be potentially an offer on the table for Marcus Libman, maybe. I think they're kind of seeing where the class shakes out, but at the very least, it would be a PWO. And that person, the last time they went through this process was Keaton Slovis. That worked out pretty well for USC. I think that Marcus Libman can play. I'm not an evaluator, especially working alongside Jason Jewell for so many years. I know what goes into evaluation and finding what makes great college football players. But Marcus Libman flat out makes plays. And I think that he can play at a high level in college, whether that be Power 5 or not. But if he goes the USC route, if all of a sudden they pull the trigger and he commits right there, boom, like, that's an interesting storyline that USC continues to do this. Another guy that kind of went this route with USC was Zach Wilson, the Saguaro wide receiver from a couple of years ago, like the Max Massengale era of Saguaro offense. That's when they were winning state championships number 4 and 5 and, those sorts of things. He was a guy that took that, he had some smaller school offers, but took that PWO, and he's been on the roster the past couple of years. I saw him when they came to town against ASU. He has bulked up a ton. And a guy I think will find the field more and more as his career continues. And Marcus Libman could follow that suit as well. He's navigating basketball right now, so a busy time of year for him on the recruiting front. Coming up next, we are going to have some of our interviews from Brad Sesmatt's Football AZ. Brad Sesmatt with Sean Poindexter, if you remember him, wide receiver over at U of A, wide receiver over at Centennial High School. Now he's in the league with the Niners, making a push for the for a big game win, and that is Sean Poindexter coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show.
So this was about a year ago, and Eric and I were hanging out talking with Jason Jewell, and he is someone that is just a wealth of knowledge, now the head football coach at Brophy. And he said, you know, the story of Sean Poindexter, have you guys heard this? Fast forward to last February, Eric and I go to Tucson because Aaron Rodgers was at a golf tournament. I wanted to go get him in Tucson. It's a very good name for the show. And Eric said to me, I want to go see Sean Poindexter. And I'd seen Sean play for the U of A. It was fine. And I said, so tell me about his backstory. And we're driving down to Tucson. And, you know, he's a volleyball kid who went to Glendale CC and so on and so forth. And then the story gets out. He plays well. He ends up not hiring an agent. He goes undrafted. And he ends up with, drumroll, the 49ers. So now Sean Poindexter comes on with me after I've given the whole backstory on this. It's not even been a year. Okay, Sean, I appreciate you jumping on board. It's not even been a year. If I would have told you a year ago that this would have been your journey, would you have believed me?
Not a chance. But at the same time, I did believe in myself when I decided to play football at Glendale Community College that my goal was to make it to the league. And I definitely didn't expect to tear my ACL in my first year and then be on, you know, a Super Bowl winning team, which is obviously awesome. And it's something that not a lot of people have experienced even playing in the league. There's guys that have been in the league many, many years and have never even been to a Super Bowl. So it's definitely a blessing and a cool experience.
Okay, let me go back on part of the story. It's from volleyball to football. Tell me how that happened.
It was just tough. I got out to the school to play volleyball, and it just wasn't a fit for me. I wanted to be back home, and I was kind of chasing something simply because I didn't qualify for Division I sports. Had I had a Division I offer out of college or out of high school, I definitely would have been playing football. But, so I picked volleyball because it was the next best thing. And my ego kept me from wanting to play at a junior college.
Yeah, it's fine. That happens a lot. So Cal Baptist was the volleyball location, but you go from there. Jason Jewell comes into your life. Without Jason Jewell, where are you today?
Oh, man. I think he played a huge part in getting me recruited. Some of the coaches wanted to keep me for 2 years, and I feel like he continued to push my name to schools. And, he was just always positive. But when I first met Jason, I was like, this dude is a freaking douche, but that's just his personality. So when you get to know him, and he's a funny guy and he likes to joke around and he's awesome. And to be honest with you, without him and him helping me get recruited, I don't know where I would be, to be honest with you.
All right. So when did it hit you at U of A, or was it before or after, that, you know what, I could actually do this and try to make a living out of this at the NFL? When was that aha moment?
You know what? To be honest with you, I set a vision and a goal for myself to make it to the league. When I was busting tables at a Mexican restaurant named Valley Luna, and I told myself that was my goal and that's what I was going to do. And at that moment on, I was like, all right, I'm going to make it happen no matter what, no matter what life brings. And so I had kind of, you know, a few struggles at U of A. With my first year, I got injured, and then my second year, I only had 19 catches, so it was tough to see the vision, but I kept pushing, and Rich Rod sat me down for an exit interview and was like, Sean, you can play in the league. I believe that you have it in you, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, well, then why do I only have 19 catches, you know, and that's tough, but even that moment right there was like, okay, he's been in the game for so long, and he's telling me this. It's like, all right, keep pushing no matter what. Comes your way. And like, even now in this circumstance, like coming off a torn ACL, it's like, okay, well, you're undrafted free agent, you tore your ACL in your first year, and it's like, I can play at this level, and I'm not going to let anything stop me from playing at this level. So I set a dream and a vision, to answer your question, that I was going to play in the league, and I obviously continued to keep working, and I found myself here. So
just so you know, Valley Luna is one of our really good partners and sponsors. The Riddles are very good people. So when you mention you bust tables at Valley Luna, just put a smile on my face.
Yeah, I love that place. I got some of the best chips and salsa. Yeah, for sure.
Talking with Sean Poindexter. He is part of the San Francisco 49ers. And you're hurt. So your preparation for the Super Bowl. What are you going through leading up to next week's game?
I'm just continuing to rehab. I'll be rehabbing until next Thursday, and then I fly out on one of the Chargers next Thursday to just be with the guys and experience the Super Bowl environment. So right now it's hard because, you know, like I'm super happy for the guys, and like I said, it's a crazy experience that not a lot of people get to participate in, and so I'm super happy for them, but I'm at the same time, like, I'm back here and I'm focused really like on myself, because there's nothing I can really do for the guys other than try and be the best version of myself for next year. So just continue to prepare and to get healthy.
When the game was winding down and it was obvious that you were going to beat Green Bay, did you have a moment of this cannot actually be happening? I know you have a strong faith, so I'm sure there was something in that space. But take me back to that moment when it became official that, you know what, I'm on a team that's going to the Super Bowl.
I think when Robbie Gould kicked the last field goal, I was like, I mean, obviously I had faith in my team the entire single, like, in the entire game. Like, I didn't have any doubt in my mind that we couldn't beat this team. But once Robbie kicked that last field goal, I was like, guys, we got to get down to the field and celebrate with the boys. So I think when I got down on the field and saw all the excitement on the field and the guys, like, I started to get, like, juiced up. And I was like, maybe I could put some cleats on and play, but it's definitely not going to happen. So
John Lynch is someone that I covered back in high school when he was a quarterback DB. And Johnny, I think, is one of the very smart, astute minds. So for him to look at you and say, there's a place for this guy within my organization, to me, says an awful lot. It's a great journey by you.
What was the question? I heard what you said. What was the question?
It's just been a great journey by you, Sean. I just think it's interesting to see where you're going through all of this.
Oh, yeah, maybe one day I'll write a book or something.
You got a lot to write there.
Yeah, for sure. It has been a journey, and being with a guy like John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, I think it's great, and them having belief in me and keeping me around is awesome. And like I said, it hasn't gone exactly how I wanted it to, but I'm obviously going to keep the faith, and I'm going to keep pushing. And if they believe in me, then why wouldn't I believe in myself? So yeah.
Sure. You going to come rehab back here when the season is over, back in Phoenix?
No, I'm going to stay out here with the Niners. I think that we have the greatest rehab program that you can have for an ACL, and I want to continue to dig into the offense, and I want to be around the strength staff, and I think it's better to be around the team at this time for me than it would be beneficial to be elsewhere. So, yeah, I'll be in Santa Clara at the 49ers facility, and then on the weekends, maybe here and there, I'll stop by in Phoenix just to spend time with the family, or in Tucson just to be around U of A. So, on the weekdays, I'll definitely be working out here.
Well, if you come back to the Valley, let's get a chip and salsa at Via Luna. I think that would be fun.
Oh, I'm 100% down for sure. Maybe they'll hook it up since we gave them a little shout out.
That's it. Hey, enjoy the Super Bowl. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on. Have a good one.
There's Sean Poindexter with us, former Centennial High School, Glendale Community College, U of A. What a story. What a journey for him. Good stuff there.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show. Appreciate Sean Poindexter jumping on with us earlier this week, talking the big game and the 49ers, a former U of A Wildcat. So as we discussed earlier in the show, there's some viral news going on over at Basha High School last night. Trent McLaughlin, a shooting guard for the Basha Bears, he made sure to specify he was a shooting guard. So tie game 48-48 between Perry and Basha, 4 seconds left. And they call a timeout. Basha has the ball. McLaughlin hits a three, banks it in to win the game. He's wearing number 24. He is a huge Kobe Bryant fan. In the stands, people are wearing Kobe Bryant jerseys, holding Kobe Bryant jerseys. We caught up with him this morning to talk about it. Right now, the video that Braden Nocco shot is at a touch under a million views And major publications are picking it up left and right. But we were able to catch up with Trenton about the shot, about what Kobe Bryant meant to him right here on the Brad Sussman Show. Sports 360 AZ now shifts their focus to Basha basketball, and the Bears had a pretty thrilling win last night over Perry, 51-48. It was a tie ball game with about 4 seconds left, and Trenton McLaughlin hit the game-winning three while wearing number 24. Trenton joins us now. We appreciate you joining us here on such short notice. And I just wanted to see, take me through that play. What was that going through your mind as you were hitting that game winner?
Man, it was crazy. We had, their point guard had tied the game with about 4 seconds left. We had called a timeout. Our coach designed a great play. Now it's just standing at half court with like 4 seconds left. Our student section was holding up Kobe jerseys. It's just a surreal feeling. And our point guard threw a great pass. Our power forward set a great screen. Right when I shot it, I knew if it had to go in, it had to be a bank. And then just a crazy moment, got swarmed by the student section. Just unforgettable.
Now, Braden Nako's video went viral. As it stands right now, as we're recording this, a touch under a million views. Who have you guys heard from on the national stage wanting to use this video or share this video?
My friends have told me that, or Braden Nako has told me that Today's Show, Fox, CBS, Sports Nation. I've gotten a bunch of emails and calls from reporters wanting to use it, and so has my friends and my mom. It's just been crazy. My coach as well.
Now, you wear number 24. Your family sent over a photo of you way back in the day wearing a Kobe Bryant jersey. I know you're a big fan of his. What does Kobe mean to you?
Oh, man. He's the reason I got into basketball. He's just such a role model for me. It was just so hard. It was so hard to go through with that, and I still just don't believe it. It's crazy.
As you're a couple days removed, I know, you know, most people were going through their usual Sunday activities when that news came out that the helicopter had crashed. 9 people had died, including Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gigi. As we've had a couple of days, but not much time to really kind of process, when you look back at Kobe's life, what sort of lessons can you take from the way he lived to use on the basketball court and off the basketball court?
I mean, first thing that comes to mind is just his competitive fire, just the way he approaches each game like it's a game 7. I know he's said that many times. I like to think that I have like that same competitive energy. My coach says he thinks I'm like that as well. He's such a role model for me and everyone around the world to just not just stop after his basketball career, but to have such a great post-basketball career and just what he was doing with women's basketball and all the companies he was investing in. He's just such an inspiration.
Now, as you look at the rest of your season, you have 5 games. You're coming off 3 wins of 3 points or less. How are you going to try to use that Mamba mentality to lead your team to really finish out the regular season strong?
Yeah, I mean, those close games are the ones that we remember the most. So I love those moments. It's just my team, we're very prepared for moments like that. And I think that the way we're playing right now, if we defend well and shoot the ball well, we're going to be able to finish it out right. I think we're ranked number 9, I believe, in the state right now. So just every team we play for the rest of the year is ranked above us. So I think just keep climbing and building wins heading into the postseason.
All right, Trenton, we appreciate the time, especially on short notice, and good luck the rest of the way this year.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Once again, just a crazy story from last night at the Basha Bears, and I appreciate Trenton jumping on very late notice. We were texting as I was coming in, and he was game, had a pocket in his schedule, so appreciate him taking some time, because a lot of people are reaching out to him, and that just kind of shows just you know, how the basketball community has kind of responded to this. Coming up next, we're going to talk some Diamondbacks baseball I'm going to give you some thoughts. Some things I talked about in Diamonds in the Desert just a couple of days ago, but want to revisit them. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show. Have had a very busy show so far. I want to talk some Diamondbacks, obviously, starting with Marte, the big news, his addition. And I want to circle back on something I said earlier in this offseason, really mid-season, when Zach Greinke got traded. It was not only with the financial flexibility that came with that trade, but also the picks that came, or the prospects that came in, and you compound that with the draft that the Arizona Diamondbacks had, where they had eight picks in the top 100. All of a sudden, Mike Hazen, who came into the Arizona Diamondbacks franchise a couple of years ago with a pretty lackluster farm system and a less than ideal flexibility finance-wise to go ahead and make some moves on a team that needed to improve. With those two things removed, all of a sudden, he wasn't walking into the ring with one hand tied behind his back anymore. And he uses the term a lot. He had to, you know, he's getting creative with the roster, or they're going to get creative with this, with that. And when that trade happened, the column I wrote was he now can still be creative, but it's not out of necessity. And I think that's a big distinction. As we've seen already, Mike Hazen has been creative, but it's not necessarily out of necessity. It's because he can to continue to reshape this roster in this offseason. He's brought in Madison Bumgarner. He's brought in Starling Marte, Stephen Vogt, Junior Guerra, Hector Rondon, you know, a lot of veteran guys that I think can really help this team. Cole Calhoun, another one. And with that, what he's been able to do is, even in this Madison Bumgarner deal, he said after they traded for Starling Marte, was they were backloading that contract on purpose with Madison Bumgarner. And they told him, we're going to use that money to go out and try to continue to fill out this roster. And Madison felt okay with that and went ahead and did that. And that's ultimately what one of the obstacles that was removed for Mike Hazen to pursue that trade. Then you have two prospects that are pretty darn good and high upside guys that are heading to the Pirates, but in two positions of depth that the Diamondbacks now have at starting pitching and at shortstop. And a lot of those, especially with the starting pitchers, those have been acquired since draft day and beyond with the Zach Greinke trade as well. So he now has the firepower necessary to go make moves, and we're seeing that byproduct. Do I think they're going to catch the Dodgers? No. And Mike Hazen is one of those things, or he's one of those people that said after we, or when we were discussing the trade in a conference call, was, I'm not going to go compare myself to the Dodgers, because that's when we can get overcorrect, or you know, over ambitious, and they have a right to be, get the respect they deserve and the, you know, be put up where they are on a pedestal because they've dominated the NL West and won that division so many times. But I think they're competitive. I think they're a better team than they were at the beginning of the offseason. I think that they definitely are in the playoff mix. I know that Mike Hazen doesn't want to revisit necessarily going to a wild card and then having to step in against the top team in the National League. Honestly, could end up being the Dodgers, as we saw in 2017, with some of your pitchers already down. He wants to try to go get that division title to make sure that they have some rest in between and are at full strength once the divisional series gets caught up. But now we're seeing the fruits of that labor, the 3 years it took to kind of turn the page, because in 2017 they had a pretty talent-rich roster, but you had A.J. Pollock on a contract year, you had Patrick Corbin on a contract year, you had Paul Goldschmidt with, he was 1 year away from a contract year. It was either you were going to have to scratch and claw to keep as many of those guys in one spot, and with that Zach Greinke contract and just the way the financials laid out, that wasn't possible. So he made the tough decision to trade the most recognizable face in the Arizona Diamondbacks franchise, at least currently, and took some flack for it. And I think it was the right move because it brought back your starting catcher of the future. If healthy, Luke Weaver is probably a number two in the rotation. But he turned that page to the next era. That window was starting to close on the way that team was configured. And he had to both rebuild and stay competitive at the same time. That's really hard to do in any sport. But baseball, I feel like that's very difficult just with the amount of games that are played. And, you know, there is a huge talent discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots in Major League Baseball. Somehow he was still able to keep these teams in the race. And Torrey Lovello as well. Torrey played a huge role in this as well. Keeping them competitive while replenishing the farm system. Those usually don't go together necessarily. Very few teams can do that, like the Dodgers. We saw the Astros have to completely tank, replenish their farm system, and then they were able to make some moves and go be World Series contenders. Yes, there are some other factors that have been discussed this offseason. I'm not going to go into those. You know, some of these top-tier teams, the Red Sox usually have the financial flexibility to go out and get the big-time players, but they also have if you look at some of their top players, they came up through the system. The Mookie Bettses of the world, the Xander Bogarts, you know, that sort of thing. Same thing with the Yankees. A lot of those guys are homegrown guys. And that's really the thing about the Dodgers. The big signings are the icing on the cake. But you have Cody Bellinger coming through your system. Clayton Kershaw came through your system. Every year it seems like they have a top five prospect in baseball who's making his debut and then instantly contributing. That's the cycle I think Mike Hazen wants to get with the Diamondbacks. He knows he doesn't have maybe the financial means that a Red Sox, a Yankees, a Dodgers have, but he knows how to orchestrate the other things to make that work. Now he has an extra hand to fight with all of a sudden, and we've seen a very productive offseason so far. Obviously, they have to go out and prove it. You know, there's a lot still to be figured out. Who's going to be that closer? You would think it'd be Archie Bradley to start, but seems like it's been competition every year. They bring in two veteran guys who are late inning guys. Kevin Ginkle, I think, could get a shot at it. The starting pitching, there's about seven arms in there. Who's going to round out that rotation? Seems like Robbie Ray is going to stick around. What does his future hold? Because he has one more year. He's approaching that Paul Goldschmidt year when he got traded. I felt like Robbie Ray was going to get traded this offseason. It hasn't happened yet. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen because we've seen that this team isn't afraid to make trades late in the game of spring training right before the year, make those moves. They brought in Adam Jones on a free agent signing. Steven Souza Jr. was a late trade. You know, they were still figuring out J.D. Martinez when, you know, camp was already breaking. So it's late in the process and they're not afraid to go make a move. But it seems like Robbie Ray is going to be sticking around and be the number two to Madison Bumgarner. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch. I said at the beginning of this year, I think Robbie Ray, if you have Robbie Ray as a two, you should be feeling pretty good about yourself. If you feel about a one, there's some risk there. He pitched like an ace in 2017. In those years since, he's pitched very well, but I don't think quite that ace quality you want. So you have him as a number two, Madison Bumgarner. He's not going to be the, you know, 2014 Madison Bumgarner who was absolutely dominant, but he's going to be very good. You have a young guy in Zach Gallen who showed a lot of promise and only eight starts. It felt like way more, which is kind of crazy. Merrill Kelly showed promise at times, was a little bit up and down. At times was pitching for his job and delivered. Mike Leake, a good veteran presence that they traded for right at the deadline. That's another option. You know, and then the aforementioned Luke Weaver. So that's about six arms that they're looking at right now. Who's going to make that rotation? Who might get bumped down? If I had to guess early on, I would think it'd be maybe Merrill Kelly or maybe Mike Leake. I don't know. Those are the storylines I'm really looking at. But it seems like now the Diamondbacks have their flexibility to go on. You know, if they want Ketel Marte to play in the outfield for a game or two here and there, they can go ahead and do that. Eduardo Escobar can move from third to another position. Nick Ahmed probably going to be your everyday shortstop. What does that mean for Jake Lamb? It seemed like Eduardo Escobar was going to be the everyday second baseman if Ketel Marte was out there in center field. That meant third base probably going to be occupied by Jake Lamb. Now, at first base, you then also have Christian Walker and Kevin Crone. Those are three power hitter guys. And Christian Walker showed, I think, much better defense than many anticipated. They thought there was going to be a significant drop-off from Goldie. There really wasn't that much of a drop-off. He was pretty darn good defensively. Kevin Crone's continuing to show his own. But Jake Lamb, he's a power-hitting guy. He's had trouble staying healthy. Against lefties, he struggles. So how does he now fit into this equation? I think that's a really interesting question. Behind the plate, you have Carson Kelly and Stephen Vogt. I think you're set there. In the outfield, you now have three established outfielders. Peralta will man left field most of the time. Center will be Starling Marte. Right will be Cole Calhoun. That's a pretty good defensive outfield. And then you have Ketel Marte in a position of strength at second base as well. All of a sudden, I think defensively, you're in a really good spot if you're the Arizona Diamondbacks. But who's going to be that fourth guy? Look, Tim LeCastro played all over. That was nice. Well, how are they going to use that 26th man on the roster that they now have access to? Still a lot of questions. I think you'll want to know how the Padres are going to make a jump. They improved significantly, fell off a little bit. Dodgers still king of the castle. Rockies, what the heck is going on with them and Nolan Arenado? And the Giants, I think, are still trying to figure it out a little bit. You know, I think they went all in their World Series era and extending a lot of those guys, and now they're getting old, and they weren't as productive as they were hoping. So now they're kind of stuck with big contracts. They still have means to go make big deals, but you kind of got to navigate. They're in the in-between. You don't want to be in the in-between, and that's why it's so impressive what Mike Hazen was able to do. He kept them out of the in-between. He kept them competitive, but he didn't have to do the, all right, let's completely tear it down to the studs and redo everything. That's what it feels like the Giants are gonna have to start doing, or have started doing. That's why it's so impressive what this front office has been able to do is navigate that while still stay competitive, still stay in playoff races. I know their goals are much higher than just being competitive in playoff races. They want to get there, they want to be a mainstay, and they want to go deep into the postseason each and every year. Thanks so much for Trent McLaughlin for sitting down with us on very, very short notice, as well as Sean Poindexter. A very busy Wednesday, a lot going on here on Sports 360 AZ. Make sure to keep it here. Be checking the site throughout the next couple of days. It's going to be a very busy time of year with recruiting, with the Waste Management Open, with spring training on the forefront. A lot going on. Devin is holding it down on the motorsports as well. Make sure to keep it here, Sports 360 AZ, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Jordan Hamm.